It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And welcome into Poke the Bear, episode 214, presented by CLNS Media and sponsored by our good friends over at Prize Picks and Factameals. My name is Connor Ryan, and once again, we are joined by a very special guest in 98.5 The Sports Hubs, Ty Anderson. Ty, what's going on?
What's up, man? How we doing?
I'm doing well, Ty. I'm a little nervous. We're recording this before the Hockey East Tournament, the most important thing that happened at the Garden the last couple of days. And rooting on the Terriers, my little Terrier stress ball. Yeah, I don't know if you can see, he's Van Gogh'd himself. He's a little worse for wear. So I don't know if that's a good omen, a bad omen, probably a bad omen. I feel like if you're losing a appendage, body part, it's not great. So we'll see how they do against the lovely University of Maine tonight on Friday to recording this. So I'm a little worried, but other than that, I think I'm doing well. I'm doing better than the Bruins, I think you can say, considering what we saw on Thursday night against the Rangers.
Yeah, there's two ways to look at what happened to your Terrier. It's either playoff hockey is in full effect and they're willing to put their body on the line and sacrifice to block shots and lose ears and, you know, do whatever they want, or you guys are screwed and it's over and time to pack it up. Terrier's ear packed it up. Time for the rest of the team and the rest of Terrier to pack it up. Definitely a weird one. I think what was most surprising about it was the fact that it was a playoff team and the Bruins have been good against playoff teams this year. It's very rare that you get the kind of, I don't want to say flat, that's maybe a bit too strong, but the lack of jump and the lack of creating, that was surprising. And we weren't the only ones surprised by it, clearly, based on what Jim Montgomery said after the game.
Yeah, and I think when you look at that loss, I don't know if I'm kind of stretching here with this take from that game, but listen, we've seen a lot of pretty crappy losses for the Bruins this year in terms of blowing third-period leads, losing in overtime, quite a few no-show performances, as you said, usually against like teams that are out of the playoff picture or really shouldn't be much of a threat to this team. When you look at a game like this, where it's kind of a statement game, I know it's still March, but like a measuring stick game against a very good Rangers team, you look at how good they are in terms of elevating their game against playoff opponents. And as you said, like the manner in which they lost, like couldn't get into inside ice, couldn't generate a whole lot. And again, it's not like the Rangers are going to be an outlier in the playoffs. Like it's only going to get tougher and tougher in terms of getting that inside ice, generating high danger looks. It's just kind of one of the more disappointing results you've seen all year in terms of the stakes, maybe a preview as to what's to come. Because, again, we've focused in on the defense, the goaltending, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. But if this team's not going to get into that grade A ice and create and be willing to do that, they're not going to go very far regardless of who they're going to play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to that point, what sucks about Thursday is that, well, the Rangers don't have, you know, Jacob Trouba, they don't have Ryan Lindgren, and they're playing Jonathan Quick, who has been good, but it's not Shesterkin, who's had a 940, I think, since the All-Star break. So, you know, you look at it from that standpoint, it's like that's a winnable game beyond the obvious of sort of, you know, what we've talked about and what this team's going to have to go through. Like that is a winnable game, and to come up flat and to not generate the 5-on-5 chances that, you know, I think they finished with four, according to Natural Stat Trick, which, you know, their internal numbers may be different, the Bruins, that is, but overall, it's probably not going to be all that different in terms of how they grade it out. So, you know, that's the second fewest they've had 5-on-5 in a game this year. And so that's where you look at it and say, they're going to have to work through, you know, some of these tighter defenses. And, you know, it's really illuminating when you see that David Pastrnak last night doesn't score a goal, Brad Marchand doesn't score a goal, and then you're relying on everybody else. And, you know, thank God for Justin Brazo, right? But you sort of watch this team right now, and when it's bad, it's bad. And when it's great, it's great. These are obvious statements, I know, but, you know, this is something that they're going to have to work through between now and game 82. And, you know, getting production from guys who aren't your stars against playoff quality opponents, because that's how they're going to have to win in the playoffs, as we've talked about many times here.
And I think when you look at the way the Bruins just set up for the rest of this regular season, doesn't get any easier. They still have 11 games, which is insane. It feels like we still have so much more to go before the playoffs even start. On a lot of really tough matchups, you play what? Carolina twice, you play Florida twice, play the Lightning, play a lot of teams that are, you know, not just, you know, like the Capitals where you play them twice, but they're maybe fringe playoff teams, might be a good matchup. The Flyers, legit teams at the top, you know, that can really cause a lot of havoc for you moving forward. So when you look at just the way this season's set up, and looking specifically at a guy like Marchand, who doesn't practice on Friday, maintenance day, as we all, you know in terms of that's been the case a couple of times this year. But Montgomery kind of said after practice on Friday that, you know, most likely will play on Saturday against the Flyers, but not set in stone. Is this kind of a situation where you might want to give a guy like Marchand a bit of a rest? Because you look at his numbers, like one goal in, I think, his last, 10 games. Hasn't scored a power play goal in 30 games, which I had to, like, do a double take to see where exactly that was. But you just look at the game, especially on Thursday, and it just feels like either, you know, anything with handling the puck, hit a couple of one-timers or kind of bounces off the stick, just seems like he might need a little bit of a reset when you look at especially what lies ahead the rest of the way this regular season.
Yeah, I just think he's pressing. I think he's pressing right now. I think he's trying to do too much. He's trying to put the team on his back, which we know he can do. We've seen it both in the playoffs and the regular season. But I think right now it's to a degree working against him. And if you could carve out a day off, you know, without it being an outright scratching, without going full Tortorella on Couturier,
yes,
if you can do that, you know, it may pay off. I just think that, you know, he's sitting on .399 right now. A little pressure. I think it's noticeable on the power play right now that he is pressing and pressing hard in terms of creating looks and trying to find the perfect seam, the perfect play. That's kind of that whole first unit as a whole. But, you know, he is a centralized sort of figure of that first unit. You know, McAvoy's the quarterback, sure, but the plays funnel through Marchand so much more than your average power play, your average elbow kind of player. I just think he's pressing right now, and you know, and that can work against you at times. And I think right now it is, and I don't believe there's an injury in terms of like that's why he's handling the puck poorly of late. But I just think that he gets in his own head sometimes of like, I have to do this, I have to do that, and again, sometimes it works against them. I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. And I think when you look at the rest of this, the way this team is set up going off of that game on Thursday, switching to probably the most pressing question in terms of this team and how they're set up for the playoffs, the goaltending. I feel like we talk about this every week, but it's only going to get louder and louder in terms of who should get the nod in game one, how they're going to augment the reps and all that stuff. When you've got a situation where you got one goalie trending in one direction and one in the other. And am I going to put all the blame on Swayman for Thursday's game? No, but there's, you know, some saves you need to make there in critical moments. I mean, even look at like the Adam Fox, you know, go ahead goal. You get the momentum back. Justin Brazo scores. You feel like, all right, knowing how the Bruins operate this year, you're like, all right, this game's going to go to overtime, but you feel like there's momentum on your side. And then it's nothing more deflating than when they're reading off, you know, who scores the goal. Crowd's still kind of into it, and then red light goes on, other team scores, sucks the air out of the building. That's just a save you, I think, you need to have there for Jeremy Swayman. So, again, it's not really changing what we've said before, but it does seem like it's a situation where I think the chorus is getting a little bit louder and louder that as much as I think Swayman for most of his year has been this kind of untouchable guy, or a guy that has been, you know, destined to get that nod for game one, doesn't seem to be the case right now. It seems like Ullmark's kind of the leader in the clubhouse, and it really shouldn't be that close right now, especially.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, to your point, I don't hate his game in a vacuum last night, Thursday night. I don't hate everything about it, but you do need timely saves. You do need your all-star goaltender to step up when your team is riding the wave. And that's been a problem. Out of the all-star break, that has been a problem. It's not the first time that Swayman, or even Ullmark for that matter, has given up a goal almost immediately after the Bruins have scored, or they're generating positive momentum, just something, right? And it's a problem. I think that's a greater problem than allowing goals with an empty net, you know, at the other end. And I say that because this team is so momentum based, right? The sport is so momentum based. And if you are constantly pissing away momentum, when, you know, we just talked about Thursday night and how that was a chore to generate offense. When you finally tie it up, you cannot allow a goal 40 seconds later. I don't care. I don't care what happens. I don't care what the breakdown is. You got to make a save. You got to make that stop. And so this has been a problem now for a little while. And, you know, there are two sequences there that you know, the first goal, Heinen gift wraps a drop back pass to Panarin. Pretty good player. Kind of soft, though. Kind of a soft goal squeaking through Swayman's legs. The second goal, I'm not going to fault him there. That was a comedy of errors.
Big old clusterfuck. So,
but it comes to the greater point, though. I said this to you last night at the game. Right now, I don't have any confidence with any shot that is thrown on goal when Jeremy Swayman is in net. I just don't have confidence in him right now. And I wonder if he has confidence as well. Like, it's been hard. He's a 902 since the All-Star break. Not what you need. Not what you're looking for. And I just feel like right now he's very fragile. I don't know if that's the right word, but it just feels like he rides a roller coaster like nobody else right now. And I just think he needs a nice, clean 30 of 31 win over a playoff team. He's not getting them right now. You know, the Toronto games, he gets them there, but he hasn't built off it. And that's the biggest problem for him right now, I think.
Going into that game, if you were the coach, Ty Anderson, Bruins head coach Ty Anderson, would you have gone with Ullmark in that game? Because it does feel like, again, they've got some tough matchups ahead. And like, yeah, you know, you've got that back-to-back coming up against Florida. Yeah. You're not going to roll a guy out like that twice. But it does seem like that game was a perfect opportunity of like, all right, Ullmark has been playing well of late. Get a day off and then go into a matchup like that. If the Bruins are going to, you know, start carving out, again, we're not going 60-40 split here or anything like that, but there's an opportunity or a window to give him more of a run here. So I think that was like the perfect chance here to kind of build that against a very good Rangers team.
100%. Recorded the Sports Hub Underground on Wednesday, and I said, hey, they should put in Ullmark for Thursday. So this isn't some revisionist history on my end after they lost the game. I felt this way after Ullmark's performance on Tuesdays, because I do feel like this team, and Jim Montgomery's backed off the idea of committing to the platoon or the rotation, whatever you want to call it. I think it's more rotation than platoon personally, but their terms, whatever. Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, the way I think they're going to look at this is it is the game one goalie's net until he loses.
Yeah.
So you have to account for the idea or the possibility of Linus Ullmark winning game one and then earning game two. You got to see these guys two games in a row at some point. We've seen Swayman get two games in a row when Linus was down, but I would have started Linus that night. I really would have. And maybe there's the part of the Bruins that are like, well, they started Linus in New York the Thanksgiving weekend and he got lit up. So let's throw Swayman at them and see how that looks. But that feels like a momentum thing. Feels like it's on Ullmark's side right now. So I probably would have gone to Linus Ullmark, I think, for that game last night. I'm surprised they didn't, honestly.
Yeah. And I feel like also it's something where I think you made a good point where this, you know, rotation, platoon, whatever you want to call it, I think it has to be momentum-based and has to be feel-based. And it's not like I think people are terrified that it's going to be like, oh, like, because they're doing this rotation, if Ullmark wins a game five, series tied 2-2, wins game five with a 36-save shutout, by the rules decreed by us, the Bruins, we must have Jeremy Swayman go game six. Like,
right,
no.
Right.
Like, no, that's not, like, again, like, it's not that they're adhering to this. It's, again, you carve out the path, you know, of what puts you in the best position to win every night. If Ullmark puts up a shutout in a critical game like that, keep it rolling. You know, right. Has a bad game. You look at, like, even if we were just to do the case study of last year, like, if you have a, you know, going into game five, you have a 3-1 cushion. Maybe you give Swayman a look there, change things up a little bit, especially after game five, where it looked like Ullmark was gassed, has that bad turnover. Tkachuk scores, clear as day. Like, all right, you should roll with Swayman and that, see if you can kind of stem the tide there. You know, if you overthink it like too much, you're going to get into, you're going to run into issues, as was the case last year. But this is not something where I think people are terrified that it's them, like, either inputting it into a computer like Carmine, like with the Red Sox, or it's something where they're so rigid with it that it defies logic. Like, it's all about feel. And when you have two, again, when they're playing at a high level, very good goaltenders, it should be a luxury. It shouldn't be a crutch or a, like, rigid burden as to how they approach this when you get to the playoffs.
100%. And I think a great example of this exact thing you're talking about is how Rod Brind'Amour has used his goalies in Carolina for the last three or four postseasons. He has gone back and forth to guys 100% based on feel versus, well, this guy started last game, so you're going to go with this guy now. Like that's how Brind'Amour has done it, who I think is one of the better coaches in the league and a guy who has had to roll with the rotation because of health, injuries, workload, that player's rookie status, like whatever the case may be. Like they are the perfect example of how you have to rotate goaltenders if you're the Bruins. And honestly, I think their goaltenders are better than Carolina's goaltenders. So it should be a strength. It shouldn't be a burden. This should be a feel-based decision. It should be a, you know, Mike Felger, my coworker, gave me so much grief because I said you have to ride with the vibes of that goaltender. And all I had to say was vibes, and that's all he's going to say now for the next 5 months. But like, But that's what it is. Like, you have to get the vibe of your room and, okay, how are they playing? How are they playing in front of Swayman versus Ullmark? And that's what I'm kind of coming back to right now. Like, when I'm saying to you, like, I just don't have a lot of confidence in Jeremy Swayman. It also feels like the Bruins, like, there's a sense of, like, when they mess up in their own zone, and they mess up in their own zone quite a bit. It's just kind of how they're built right now. It feels like they have more confidence in Linus Ullmark making that save than Jeremy Swayman right now. It doesn't feel like the heads hang as low as when they mess up when Swayman's in net. Or I'm sorry, when Ullmark is in net. Like, it just feels like there's a different vibe when they're playing in front of Ullmark right now.
Yeah. No, hockey is absolutely based on vibes. If you don't think hockey is based on vibes, remember when Bruce Cassidy rolled out the Misfits for the starting lineup, just completely fucking changed his entire lineup, rolled out that 5-man crew, and was like, all right, they're going to win that game.
Yeah.
That's vibes, baby.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's sort of like, you know, you have to sort of, this is what makes good coaches great, is knowing what buttons to press and when to press them, you know? And this is why this postseason, it's a big postseason for Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman, two guys that have yet to escape the first round. It's also a big one for Jim Montgomery, you know, because last year he talked about it. I could have coached from the stands, basically, is what he said, because that team was so good. This year he's going to have to work some magic, and he's going to have his finger on the pulse of what decisions need to be made and when they need to be made. Like, he's not going to get bailed out by a super team this year. Not that he did last year either, but like, he's got to be on top of that this year versus passing the buck to, you know, goalie Bob or Joe Sacco or Chris Kelly or whoever. Like, he's got to own everything they do this postseason.
Absolutely. So we quite a bit of conversation about the goaltending. I'm sure that will not end between now and April, May, June, whenever this season ends. But before we move on to our next segment, Ty, let's take a quick break, hear from our good friends over at Prize Picks. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is just heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's #1 fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. Want to play alongside some of Prize Picks' favorite players like Meek Mill and Sugar Sean O'Malley? You can now find community plays under the Promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the Prize Picks community each week. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and a huge selection of players and stat types are what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. And with the Bruins season in full swing, there are plenty of ways to participate in Prize Picks. This week, I'm selecting David Pastrnak for more than 3 goals and Charlie McAvoy for more than 4 assists. So download the Prize Picks app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, use code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Once again, shout out to our good friends over at Prize Picks. All right, Ty, one of the few positives from Thursday's game, another good performance from Justin Brazzo, who now has, what, 3 goals in 2 games, right on the net front there. We've talked about it before that he's been really good in board battles, not the most physical guy, was kind of the scouting report coming out of Providence. But when you got a guy who's 6'5", you know, hanging onto the puck, not a lot, you're not really moving that guy around. So he's been a really useful player so far for this team. Could you see, again, remains to be seen how this lineup kind of pans out, but going into the playoffs, could he be a guy that could be due for either, you know, more reps on the power play, higher up in the lineup on the third line? Because, you know, I talked about this with Evan, that he could be a guy that if JVR is still kind of struggling to find his game, if your third line all of a sudden is like a Frederick Geeky Brazzo line, a lot of heft, a lot of beef on that line, if that is kind of what comes to be.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, I'd like to see him get a run there. I think what's really impressive about him is that, you know, talking after Tuesday's game where he had 2 goals, Jim Montgomery said there's only been one game where he has been happy with Brazzo's performance. To go 12 for 13 and now 13 for 14 as a rookie, with your coach, you know, coaches at this level are so eagle-eyed with their first-year players. It's like, because they got to know if they can trust them. So to go 13 for 14, that's very impressive. And that really speaks to the value he's added to their fourth line, to their second power play unit. I think what you have to like about him is that when he goes into a battle, you feel pretty damn confident he's going to come out with the puck, or he's going to make a play to extend possession or to maintain possession. You've seen that now on the power play. You saw it on the power play last night. And I think that's really what's making him such a viable threat right now, is that this team is not a possession team. So what they need guys to win one-on-one battles to extend the possession time they do have. And Brazzo's been a monster at that, on the power play specifically. And I think you're seeing it pay off in a major way. So I would like to see him get an elevation here at some point. It's just where, right? Like Geeky Frederick Brazzo, like, it's interesting, but also Geeky's been a guy who goes to the net front. Now do you have, like, so how does that all work out? Right? Like, that's kind of it, but no, it's a great point. Like, it's worth taking a look at. Right. Yeah. Like it's worth taking a look at if for no other reason than he's earned it. Right. And I think as a team with all these open spots right now, like, it needs to be a meritocracy in terms of guys earning their minutes and earning their reps, earning their roles. And Brazzo's earning them right now. So you got to find a way to get him more minutes, whether it's third line, top power play unit. I don't care, but you got to do it, I think, personally.
Yeah, and I think what's impressed me is, like, obviously the size is there, you know, the being able to win these board battles, hold on to pucks, but even, like, his hands and his, like, reach especially. I think, like, his reach is something that, like, you know, he has that really good goal on a Tuesday against Ottawa where you're like, oh, I didn't know that guy could do that. We know he's a big body. We know he can screen goalies, you know, muck things up at the net front. But even like his reach, it's been a couple of times where he's battling for a puck. Of course, he gets jammed out. And all of a sudden, he like reaches out, like grabs it on his backhand. And like he's been kind of like a Dyson vacuum in terms of like the puck, you know, gets knocked around. He's able to regain it quick, feed a puck out to a grade A ice. There's been a couple of times where he's done that. So, yeah, if he's able to be put in a spot, and as you said, I think you hit the nail on the head where like this lineup is still in such a state of flux, right? Like, again, you don't want JVR, who's been good for most of the year, to all of a sudden get fallen out of the lineup. We don't know what Pat Maroon's going to look like in a few weeks if he's a guy that slots in there as well. So it is all really interesting to see how it all kind of pans together. It would be very funny if the Bruins play the Maple Leafs in the first round and Phil's got the perfect series where a guy like Justin Brazeau gets like 4 goals in 6 games, right?
Right. No, like, and I thought it was, I thought it was really interesting that Montgomery said that he's like a discount version of Dave Andrechuk, right? Like I see Mike Knubel, like the guy who's so good in front of the net, big frame, knows how to use it, wins battles, wins possession. And you know, I'm so happy you brought up using the stick and using the frame. Like that's hard for a 6'5" guy to use the frame without getting penalized. Like that takes work and that takes effort, but to be able to do that is I think really impressive. And you know, if he can continue to do that, like I gotta be honest with you, I'm not sitting in for Pat Maroon right now. I'm just not doing it. I don't care that Pat Maroon can be deterrent or can fight or do whatever. Like Brazeau has earned his minutes. And right now, you know, if it's a 3-horse race, it might be, or a 4-horse race in this point, might be between JVR, Loco, Beecher, and Maroon. Like it might be those four battling for 1 or 2 spots. And because right now, there's no conceivable way you can take Brazeau out of this lineup right now. He's been productive as hell, and you can't take him out.
Absolutely. So before we kind of wrap this podcast up, looking a little bit ahead at the playoffs, let's take another quick break. Hear from my good friends over at Factor Meals.
Let me tell you about my good friends over at Factor Meals. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. 2-minute meals, fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Pancakes, smoothies, and more. If you're looking for fast premium options with no cooking required, sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So head to factormeals.com/Bruins50 and use code Bruins50 to get 50% off. Again, that's code Bruins50 at factormeals.com/Bruins50 to get 50% off. Now, back to the show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Once again, shout out to our good friends over at Factor Meals. All right, Ty, let's wrap this one up with a quick one here, looking ahead. Who is the team you would most want the Bruins to play in the first round? Because there's a lot of things up in the air. Depends on where the Bruins finish, whether they're first, whether they end up going to the wild card, whether they're number two in the Atlantic, what have you. Who do you want them to play?
Well, I think if we're looking at this from the standpoint of if they are to win the division, which in theory is still in their hands, with having 2 games against Florida and being ahead of Florida. I think you'd want to be the first overall and you want to have the potential of home ice. We know how difficult Carolina is playing in their building. We know how difficult MSG can be if you give a team like the Rangers, a deeper team like the Rangers, the benefit of last change. Again, this is all assuming the Bruins move out of the first round and the second round, which is a long way to go. We all know, as last year proved. I'd want to say that the Devils would be your best matchup, a team that has just gigantic question marks in net, gigantic question marks, a team that has not scored first many, many times this year. They're always working from behind. And if there's one thing about the Bruins is that if they can put a team away early, they're in a better spot, right? And so that might be your best case scenario. Of that wild card grouping, who's your worst case scenario in your opinion?
Oh my God. I mean, like that's like the damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Where it's like the wild card, there's a good chance that you're playing a team that is like dropping in the standings, is just manages to get in, and then you run the risk of a team that's red hot that like surges. So like,
right.
Hell, like what happens if like you play like Buffalo or someone like that, a team that like has had so many guys underperform but have like talent that all of a sudden, like, you know, you go into that series and all of a sudden it's feels like you're playing like the Sabres of the late 90s again, right, where they just get hot and something like that. The one team that I want nothing to do with, and again, they've kind of fallen off quite a bit as of late, the Islanders. Again, they've got a minus 26 goal differential, playing like crap, I think, like the last week especially. That team is boring. They clog things up. They have good goaltending, and they can grind you. And all of a sudden, at the you feel like you're just trudging along, and all of a sudden you're down 3-2, and they're hanging on to a one-goal lead in the third period and snuff you out. Like, that's what the Islanders are to me, that if their goaltending's hot, they've got a few guys that have killed the Bruins historically. That's one that if they sneak in, get hot, and they're the wild card too, and you're sitting pretty atop the standings, I want nothing to do with that team. Nothing at all.
Yeah, no, it's totally fair. And I think, you know, what's interesting about it is that, you know, the way the Islanders play is worrisome in the sense that that physicality, that grinding you down. And that is, conversely, that's why I think you'd want to play the Devils. Whenever I watch the Bruins and the Devils play the last two seasons, I have walked away from those games going, this Devils team does not like to play physical. They do not like to play. When the Bruins, a team that everyone in the world, you know, everyone, I shouldn't say the world, everyone in New England says isn't heavy enough or isn't strong enough, is able to manhandle the Devils from a physical standpoint every game. That means something, right? And so that's why I'd pick them. The odds of them being that team are pretty low. Money Puck's latest odds have the Devils at just under 11% chance of making the playoffs as a wild card two. The favorite right now, if you had to guess, who would that be to be the wild card two in the Eastern Conference?
Wild card two?
Yeah.
I would say Red Wings.
Red Wings at 38.9%, according to Money Puck. Washington Capitals at 2 at 24.7%. So
I would take Caps. That's a team that you play well against.
You just want to go see your parents. That's all.
It helps out that the folks, my lovely parents are down in DC, so that'd be a lot more convenient. That's true. They also have Nando's in Washington DC. Lovely place to have some peri peri chicken. But yes. I think that's a good match. I'll take the team that's a minus 30 goal differential.
Yeah,
the Bruins just need one of these matchups of a team that they could win in 5 or 6 games. Like, you look at the Panthers last year, President's Trophy the year before, a lot of talent, a lot of underperforming guys playing at a high level. Like, again, you look at just how last year played out, where the Pittsburgh Penguins, a crappy team, were in that driver's seat and they lost at home to the really bad Blackhawks.
Bad Blue Jackets.
Exactly. If the Bruins of last year played that Penguins team, that's 5 games. That team,
very most, yeah.
So you run that risk of who you draw, but you look at how that Capitals team is with the esteemed Connor McMichael as their first line center. I'm taking the Bruins in that matchup.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I felt like I gave the Bruins a kiss of death last year. I did TV. I was on NBC Sports Boston. It was the weekend before the playoffs began, and Trenny asked me, she goes, is there any chance that the Panthers have in this series? And I went, yeah, they have a chance if Matthew Tkachuk takes over the series. And then, oh my God, he took over the series. he was watching that day from his hotel, apparently. And so there are certain teams you look at and say, okay, that's a nightmare scenario because that player can take over a series. Like to your point, like it's not the Islanders that can take over a series per se. It's their identity that can take over a series, right? And so, you know, Detroit doesn't scare me like they do, despite the regular season head-to-heads between these teams not exactly going the Bruins' way. I think that's a team that is combustible. I think it's a team that has to rely on a lot of offensive freedom, which I don't know if you're going to get. You know, when this team gets kind of centered and gets back to playing their identity, I think their checking game, you know, we've talked about this, their checking game has been really good of late, right? And I feel like that's going to return to the surface for them in the playoffs because it's going to have to. They have to play that way. They can't play any other way. So I would agree with you in the Islanders. Caps, yeah, I mean, maybe that's just me being me and remembering 2012 and remembering, you know, 97, 98, I think was the first time I saw the Capitals beat the Bruins in the playoffs. Ovechkin, late career Ovechkin still scares me. For a team that takes a lot of penalties and a team that is killing a lot, the idea of him just shooting piss missiles all for seven games does worry me a little bit. But I will agree that their goaltending differential and their overall roster complexion, not as formidable as it was, say, 5 years ago.
Yes. So we'll see how it plays out. Also, the Bruins could very well draw the Maple Leafs, which I think we both agree would be a great series and one that I think the Bruins can still win that as well. So we will see how it all kind of plays out over the next couple of weeks as we stare at the standings. But Ty, where can we read your stuff? Where can we hear you on the airwaves? All that good stuff. Where can we find you?
So you can see me on, you can hear me on 98.5 Sports Hub, and you can read me on 98.5thesportshub.com. Also a podcast there with my friend Matt, Sports Hub Underground. We do that once a week as well. So, catch me there. How about yourself?
Yeah, you can read my stuff over at boston.com and the Boston Globe. And you can find me, obviously, on this podcast. I do one with our other good friend, Evan Marinovsky.
And my friend.
As well. That's true. My good friend, Ty's nemesis, Evan Marinovsky. And you can also follow me on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, at @ConorRyan_93. So that is episode 214 of Poke the Bear. I'm Connor Ryan. That is Ty Anderson. You fans have a great rest of your week.